CliffCentral.com.
Lenny Kravitz. It's called Again. What a guy. Lenny Kravitz, very nice to start you off on this Tuesday morning. We've got to do a bit of housekeeping before we get on with the show. I'm just going through some messages here, and I think we hit a nerve with this homeschooling thing, because there are lots of people who are thinking about homeschooling very seriously since lockdown. And I think it's great, because what the hell are you entrusting the education of your children to the state for? These are the people that you wouldn't trust anything with. Look at what they've done to Eskom, Transnet, SAA, any PRASA, any number of state-owned entities. Would you trust them with molding the mind of your child? That would be, I think, something which would recommend you to be in dereliction of duty as a parent. If you trust the state with the education of your child, don't be surprised when your child comes out average or worse than average. So I am entirely in favor of homeschooling. And Janet says, my daughter is in a cottage school or a learning academy. It's basically homeschooling in a building consisting of about 40 kids from grade 1 to 12. Classes up to 6 max. That's terrific. It works terrifically, she says. The kids sit far apart and are screened, etc. But most important, they still have the socializing benefit. I highly recommend it. Some learning centers like this one even accommodate kids on the autism spectrum. So we have truly hit the jackpot there. Truth be told, during lockdown, it became clear to me why homeschooling is not an option. I suck as a teacher. So that makes a lot of sense. That kind of smaller environment is terrific.
Yeah, and this is an obvious pro of homeschooling that tons of people would know. But a family that's close to ours homeschools their children, and they're able to actually move faster because now you're dealing with these three individual people as opposed to a whole class of 30 where you have to go, okay, no, let's all now just make sure that we can spell the word triangle as opposed to, well, okay, no, if you can get your head around certain concepts faster, then we can move on and cover more ground.
Well, so if I did have children and if I had lots and lots of money, I would get home tutors. So you'd actually hire people to come in, you know, on a sort of schedule. Mondays would be mathematics and science, and you get probably one teacher who could do both. Tuesdays would be languages, you know. Wednesdays would be art and history. Thursdays would probably be the more practical stuff, and then maybe Fridays you do an out of home lesson. So that Fridays you'd hire someone who would take them to museums or take them to farms or take them to places where they could see how the world works. That's how I would do it if I were a parent and I had enough money. I'd hire people Monday through to Friday to take the children, first of all, out of the house on a Friday and second of all, out of my hands on a Monday to Thursday, and people who were qualified to teach them, because I don't know that I would be a good teacher in all of those subjects. I'd probably be really shit. But of course, you need money for that, and you need to be able to find the tutors. But there are plenty of really good teachers in South Africa who can't get jobs at schools and who would be terrific at this. And I'm sure that there are agencies that find these tutors, because I wouldn't want my kids to learn at a public school in this country. Not a chance. I don't trust this state education system. Imagine Angie Mocheha pitches to teach your child. What's she going to teach? What is that woman going to teach your child? I mean, really, like, what is she going to add value to your child's brain with?
I was going to say the consolation prize is that, you know, these leaders aren't the ones in the classroom. They're fantastic teachers in this country.
Yes, but state school. Yeah, I think state schools are still a disaster. Even because they're administered by those people, by people like Angie Mocheha, yes. You know, and who wants to work? Like, who wakes up in the morning and goes, I want to work for Angie Mocheha. She's inspiring. No one. Well, said no one ever.
A lot of teachers don't think like that, though, Gareth.
Yeah, but you work for the state education department that she's in charge of. No, dude. Sorry. You know, there was always a part of me that was a bit embarrassed to be working at the SABC every day I went in there. Because ultimately, you want to... Well, you want to respect your boss, you know? Mm-hmm. And it felt so good to get out. So I think I can speak on behalf of people who worked for the state. It's not good. It's really not good. Okay. Some interesting things that we've got to get to this morning. And we've had this fantasy going for a couple of weeks now, and I don't want to give up on it yet, because I did actually go on to Lotto Land and place the bet and see, I guess, what I won.
Okay. My visa's here. No, my passport's and my visa's here. I can pack my bags.
I won.
We'll be out of here by 10.
Calm down. I won like 65 Rand.
Again.
So I'm thinking third time lucky. I know this is totally irrational, but I'm thinking third time lucky. I'm going to go for this US Powerball. So
it will be 65 million.
No. So listen, I'll take whatever. Here are some Lotto Land draws that you might be on the lookout for. Tuesday, that's today, we've got the Super Enalotto, which is the Italian one. That is now at 1.1 billion Rand. And because Italy is such a disaster at the moment, maybe your chances are increased, because the Italians are all busy rioting and revolting against lockdown. So maybe this is your chance. I think I'm going to take a bet on that one, 1.1 billion Rand. And Euro Millions offering a payout of 1.7 billion Rand. The German Lotto, which is coming up tomorrow, has rolled over to 211 million Rand, and Mega Millions standing at 7.5 billion still. That's just unreal. Don't miss out on these massive payouts only on Lotto Land. Place your bets now on lottoland.co.za. Lotto Land is licensed with the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. You have to be 18 years or older to place a bet. Winners know when to stop. The National Responsible Gambling Toll-Free Counseling Line is 0800-006-008.
Yeah, I know when to stop.
I could do with some billions.
Otherwise, it gets messy.
Yes, sir. Very messy. Know when to stop. But I'm going to go one more time, I reckon. Don't you think? Come on. Come on, man. Here's the deal. Come on, man.
Okay, Biden. What I also love is the fact that somehow I feel entitled to your money.
Okay.
Somehow, just because you win, I feel like you'll share that.
Sia, you think I would share, huh? You read me wrong, Sia. No, you know what I would? Here's what I would do. Seriously, can we talk about this again? Because I know it's a fantasy, but this is a road I could always go down. So if I won, let's say that 1.1 billion, the Super Enalotto, right, the Italian one. So I would definitely immediately give, I'd allocate, let's say, 10% of my winnings to giving to other people. So that gives me, you know, over 100 million Rand to play with. So I'd say, Sia, congratulations, you're a millionaire. I would definitely give you 1 million Rand. I'd give all the people at Cliff Central 1 million Rand. I would give each of my family members 1 million Rand. I'd give one or two of my handpicked friends 1 million Rand, especially the ones who are in some financial difficulty. And I would give to my favorite charities. Like I would help along one or two animal charities. I'd help Headway. You know, there are a few others that I could think of. Women and Men Against Child Abuse. I like them. So that 100 million, I'd get rid of it. None of it would be for me. And then the other 90%, you know, most of it would go into the bank and sit there and gather interest. But I would. I'd give you you'd wake up tomorrow morning and there'd be 1 million Rand in your bank.
And then by Thursday it's gone. Because I've always
you'd
like
spend it already. You'd get rid of all of it. Yes. Straight away, Sia.
I like the idea of like having, doing stupid things with money. Really, in a perfect world where you have, you know, and I'm not even talking about like billions, but you know, if you have 5 million to play with. Uh-huh. Just to be stupid, like, you know, if I want to just pull a prank on you, Gareth, you leave the house and you come back in the afternoon and your house is just painted a different color. And I'd be standing there in a car just to see your reaction of what you
bastard.
Do. You
yeah, know? You're a bastard.
But and then I'd paint it back, you know, I wouldn't ruin your life, but I just want to play stupid pranks on people.
Yeah, that's horrible. That's called money bullying.
Stupid things. To pull a pretty woman, so, you go into a store, you have, you know, bad service, then you go, actually, I'll buy.
I'll buy the store, yeah.
Whatever.
So Justice Lisilo, who's a regular listener of ours, has this to say while on the money topic. He says, morning team, thanks for the crypto Bitcoin feature. I've been reading a lot of interesting articles on MoneyWeb and gold versus Bitcoin, and it's very clear that these are not scams. It features Sean Saunders from Revix. So thanks to you for introducing me to Sean Saunders and Revix and now reading about these things on MoneyWeb. So that's great, Justice. I'm glad that you're finding it useful. Gareth, you forget that the thieving government will take 40% plus of your winnings. Yeah, I know, but what can you do about that? There's nothing you can do. So that's why I would say before they get their filthy hands on it, 10% of it will go to charity. You know, you get lawyers, you get accountants, you get them to sit down with SARS and they negotiate it. Because that an amount this big, they would have to negotiate. And you say to SARS, all right, well, you guys, and I would be in that discussion. I wouldn't leave it to the lawyers and the accountants. I'd say, all right, SARS, tell me what I've got for my tax ever since I've been a legal taxpayer in South Africa. Show me a statement of like the value you've added to my life as SARS for the money I've given you, half of everything I've earned almost since I was 20. And I want them to do a presentation on that. And I want them to show me how little I've got for my taxes. And then I'll say to them, all right, now let's talk about how much you think you're entitled to. And in a case like this, maybe you get to, I don't know, maybe you could leave some of it in, you know, Italy. In this case, or in America, if you win that one, because I wouldn't bring it all back here. I wouldn't give those thieving sons of bitches more than absolutely the law required. But what could you do? Rebellious Ruth says, gee, I'd do the same thing, pretty much help my closest and the animal charities that I'm close to. And there are a few other comments on this. If you win big, you could even get Carl a young girlfriend. Well, Carl is 10 years old, my dog, and I don't know that he would want any other dogs living in this house. I've kind of got to wait for him to die before I can think about other dogs.
There is something so oddly funny about seeing an older dog have to deal with new young dog.
Like, yeah.
We've done that a couple of times in my
childhood. See, if I suddenly decided to get married, that would be the same scenario. I'd be the older dog that would have to get used to some younger dog. No, thank you.
You just don't want someone yapping in your ear and they're trying to force you to do things. You just want to like lie flat.
Exactly. And ignore the younger dog. All right. Beth is asking a lot of questions. I love these. So Beth says, Sia, yes, when a child struggles, you can spend extra time with them on the elements they're struggling with if you're homeschooling. She also says, it's cheap to do homeschooling co-op. Parents teach their strengths to all the kids. Yeah, and that's where a little community can be very, very helpful. So if you live in a, you know, in a kind of village or a little gated community or whatever, you can find out which people are good at what things, and then they can become the tutor for that day. So you could do that, and then all the parents pitch in, you know, because everyone has different skills. And then the kids will come out more comprehensive and more rounded by the end of their education. I also think that you can get more done with smaller classes of kids. So it's interesting. I do believe that it is time for us to move away from state education and from allowing the government so much say in what we put into our children's heads. But again, I'm not a parent, so good luck to you.
Think about what happened when you were in school, when really there would be a chunk of a lesson where it's about keeping the people quiet, and then the people are talking at the back, and then there's a dude who didn't do his homework, so now he has to get reprimanded, like in a funny, screwed up way. In like English classes, I was used because for the last 2 years of high school, I was very close to my English teacher. So I'd be used as a foil for the rest of the class if they didn't feel like reading through Othello again. They're like, see, talk to her. So we'd be yapping away. And that's like, you know, half the lesson gone talking about nonsense and we aren't actually learning.
Monwabisi says, Gareth, I see you've repositioned your mic's XLR cable. Seeing it bent like that made me sad.
Wow.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? This is Monwabisi, who's obviously a bit of a sound technician. So it should really be like that. I'm just moving it slightly, and then it's not so bent. But yes, good point, Monwabisi. We're trying to improve the quality of the sound. I actually listened to a podcast of ours from last week, Thursday, and I was horrified at how bad the sound was. So I'm going to be reading the Riot Act today. We also had technical problems on the TV show yesterday, which really irritated me. I haven't been so annoyed in a long time. And none of our guests could hear each other, and we've got to go in and re-record stuff today. Tonight, actually. What, 9 o'clock? What time do we have to be there?
Yeah, well, 8:30 for makeup, and then we start at
9. 9 o'clock in the evening to get the show ready for tomorrow night.
You know, I left that situation because, you know, it was a toing and froing amongst the crew of what was happening and how we can solve everything. I left that situation honestly feeling a little, not ill, because that's a dramatic, but I just don't like conflict. And it wasn't, no one was rude, no one was shouting, but I just don't like having to disagree and even slightly raise my voice with people.
I know.
It is just not something that I
so
like.
So Sia just made a call. I was very proud of Sia. He took control and he said, no, we're not recording this today. You guys have basically fucked up, and you need to get your act together, and we will record this tomorrow. Find a time. And I just sat there because I knew if I said anything, I'd be very angry, and I'd regret whatever I said, so I just shut up. But these things happen, you know. They happen with anything. They happen with this show sometimes. They happen in everybody's place of work. Something goes wrong technically, or someone screws up, and it can be very annoying. I was just very irritated because Jonathan Witt was sitting there with me at the desk, and he's a doctor. You know, the guy is busy saving lives. He's got an important job to do. And he sat there, and we never even got to ask him a single question because technically there were problems with the two guests from America. And now he's got to come back tonight at 9 o'clock. I'm very annoyed for him. Anyway, Kate says, I miss Jane Malachi. Please can you get her to make a special appearance so that we can hear how her lockdown life was. I remember how much she hated Ben. Yes. And she also had issues, says Kyle, with Bulelo and her Coke that she put in the fridge that he drank. Yes, Jane Malachi. We must get her on the show.
You know, we don't have to rehash the ugly past on people. We really just don't.
Yeah. Listen to this. This is interesting from Woody. He says, there's a woman called Khalifa in my street who is unemployed and who takes some primary school kids in the area to tutor them on whatever subjects they want. She takes them in group sessions and one-on-one sessions. She does it for free, and if the parents want to, they give her a payment, but it's up to them. I think that's really good of her. We need more people like Khalifa. Yeah, I agree. Well, sorry, Khasifa is her name, not Khalifa. Khasifa. So, yeah,
well,
that's terrific.
She enjoys that.
Amazing, but... but also, you know, she's – I think people should pay for what she's doing there. She's not only teaching your kids, but she's also babysitting your kids. And each of those deserves a fee. So if you're a parent and you don't pay her, you're actually lazy. And you're not a very nice person. So I think you should pay her. Janet says, another perk of the homeschooling center is they're very laid back. We will probably be late for school this morning as I'm enjoying the show too much today. I missed Leanne's song yesterday because I needed to do the school run. Ah, but you see, you have podcasts for this, so you don't have an excuse. Don't be embarrassing. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious.
I still haven't heard where that comes from. I still have no idea where that's from.
I still also sing it from Leanne's version in some TikTok video or some game. I don't know.
This is an amazing story. I don't know if it's true, mm-hmm. but apparently the city of Johannesburg spent millions of rands buying Egyptian owls and releasing them in Alexandra Township to solve the rat problem. But then the superstitious people of Alex were killing the owls because they thought that they were an omen of bad things to come.
Gareth, don't you remember this story?
No, is this a real story?
It's from a few years ago, yes. And I just randomly thought about it yesterday. I actually had to call a friend and we were laughing about it. But the city of Joburg, they made a big thing about it. I actually even went back, and I love the fact that the statement is still on their website. So they're very proud of this. They called it, they worked with an organization called Eco Solutions, and they got these Egyptian owls. No, that's when Alex had this massive, massive rat problem. And they installed it in three schools in Alex, and they were really thinking it would run for 3 years. And these owls, each owl eats about an average of 6 to 10 rats a night. So they thought this will be great. We will be able to cut 3,000 rats per year. And this is what is going to help Alex. Now, what they didn't realize is the fact that for a lot of black people, owls are not a good thing.
Yes.
Owls symbolize death. Owls symbolize negativity. So as soon as these owls were let out, they were like dying like this.
Oh, my God.
Because the people in Alex would like set up traps. They'd like shoot them out of, you know, the sky. They just didn't want the owls around. So we had tons of cats.
Oh, Jesus. What a waste of money, though. Really, what a waste of money. What a stupid idea. That's so embarrassing.
Tons of cash that was wasted. I don't know why I thought about it, but it really made me laugh. It still does. It's ridiculous.
We didn't get to the story yesterday, but that guy in KwaZulu-Natal who's planting banana trees in potholes, obviously, this is not to be encouraged, because a banana tree is something, you know, it's slightly difficult to drive around a banana tree. I mean, it's also difficult to drive around a pothole. But did he eventually get any reaction from the municipality? Did they eventually fix the potholes?
So, yeah, this guy's really hurtful. With everything that's happening. He's in KwaDukuza. and so after a very long time, his name is Rishi Puran. After a very long time, he's been trying to talk to the municipality, trying to get them to solve the potholes, but he wasn't getting any responses whatsoever. So he said, screw it. If you want a very strong message, then here this is. And he's encouraging a lot of other people in the municipality as well to do this, because in his Facebook message, he says, this is my challenge to all residents who are sick and tired of the poor service delivered here. Our municipality did the Jerusalem challenge, so this is my challenge. Whenever you see a pothole, plant a tree, preferably a banana tree, as our town is now becoming a banana republic. Let's not sit back because our officials from the municipality don't drive in our areas. They live in estates and they don't know the conditions of our roads. So once they find out all of these trees are in potholes, maybe someone will take action.
That's good.
You know, this guy's been living in the neighborhood for 20 years and, you know, his frustration is somewhat justified. Look, is it the best thing to do this? That's debatable. But he says, we've been left high and dry and it seems to be up to us to do something about it. Maybe this will get the officials to take notice. And you do know that, you know, a banana plant isn't a tiny little thing.
No, it's quite big, tall. Yeah. I mean, like it, though. I love the fact that people just eventually, you know, tell these municipalities off by actually, that's civil disobedience. I love it. I think it's really good.
And also after he's been patient and he's followed all the due protocol and he emails people and he reaches out to people and still nothing happens, well, here you go.
Yeah. I see that there are also, I've been invited to this thing tomorrow. It's like it's about podcasting, but it involves a virtual reality headset. So they sent me this virtual reality headset, which, so I'm gonna plug it in today and see. I've never had a piece of equipment like this in my house before, so I'm going to see what I can learn in virtual reality today, and maybe I'll be able to speak about it a bit tomorrow on the show.
Are you an attendee or
would I'm speaking. So I'm on some panel or whatever, but they've sent me this VR headset, so I'm going to see what that's all about. And apparently the event is in virtual reality, so I'll be able to see all the other people in the audience. And who knows? Who knows? Could be quite interesting.
No, I think back to, I think it was 2017, we had a
Yeah.
guest on the show who spoke about virtual reality. And I remember you got quite passionate about it, thinking, I can see all of the great artwork and I can go to places
Yeah.
that I've never been to before. And I wasn't much of a fan. And look now, cut to 3 years
Well,
later, I think all of this is
yeah.
happening
I mean, especially
sooner than
because
we
we
expected.
can't go to those places at the moment, so maybe virtual reality is the next best thing. And I know a lot of the big museums in Europe and a lot of famous places all over the world allow you to do virtual reality tours of them, which would be amazing. Mapelo says, "Morning, everybody. I applied to be an extra on Yo TV. Now they want me to pay them 250 rand. What should I do?" Ah, Jesus.
Is
Mapelo
Yo TV
run.
still a thing?
I don't even know if you're. Is Yo TV still a thing? Is it, Sia?
That was going to be one of my first points. Firstly, it's not as great and as big as it was in the heyday
So
of Yo TV.
why would Mapelo want to be on there as an extra?
I don't know.
And you have to
And
pay
no, that
them.
no, it sounds very fishy. In no production that I know of would make you pay to be part of
Yeah.
it, even if you're going
Yeah.
through a casting agent or something. No reputable casting agents would make you pay to be on their list. So
Having said that, we're dealing with people that think we should pay a TV license if we got Netflix. So let's not try and be rational with these people. We're not dealing
by the
with
way, those memes have been hilarious this week. The
The internet's
SABC one,
undefeated.
yo. So I've got to
I've
ask.
seen one that says a security guard has now had to pay for a TV license because he was reviewing CCTV footage. Come on,
Bulelo,
guys.
I want to know your thoughts on this because I know you've had a lot to say to me on WhatsApp about Katlego Maboy and the entire
Oh, my
debacle around
goodness.
that. So what are your thoughts? Because you weren't on the show on Friday or
Oh, my
yesterday,
goodness.
so go on.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, what is happening to this world? Number one, could we just grow an appetite for controversy? And it's not even that controversial. A friend of mine put it beautifully. She works in the biz of PR, and she says, guys, there's no such thing, and big listener of the show, by the way, but she says, there's no such thing as, what's it, the outrage, or what do people call it? Cancel culture, or
She doesn't believe in that?
there's a term. No, she says she's in PR. Guys, by next week, what our insurance should have done is lock down for a little bit. This thing will pass. By next week,
Exactly.
we're worried about the fact that there was an interracial
How
couple who
many
dared
people,
to walk outside
exactly.
with their hands holding together or
Bulelo,
whatever, man.
how many people are outside Clicks right now
Oh, my
protesting
goodness.
Tresemme? Who? Nobody. Zero. No people.
Thank you.
Because it was a big deal. 3 weeks ago, no one would talk about shampoo because they're terrified that the EFF would come and protest outside their house. Well, look what happens. It people move on.
Oh my goodness. You know what's so dumb is that whatever he did in his personal life, all right, so Katlego, not a good look. Is the guy affected at work? Is he late for work?
This is what
So,
I
and.
said about Amy Coney Barrett earlier. If she's a religious person who has seven children, but she's a really good judge, you separate her being a judge from all the other stuff. And the same goes for Katleho.
And
Outsurance is
then
not
I.
a place we go
Yeah.
to for moral guidance.
And too many people have read crappy business books that keep talking about customer loyalty. I spoke to a mentor
Brand
of mine about.
awareness and brand integrity. Fuck off. I don't care. Like insurance. Like, I'm really worried about your brand integrity.
And also, but there's no
Insurance.
such thing as insure. But there's no such thing as customer loyalty. People need to get out of that. Is customers are loyal to themselves. There is outsurance. If your product is great, trust me, people will come back. There is no customer loyalty. I am only loyal to my rand. So every dumb excuse they came with to fire this guy is
Yeah.
pathetic. I want to know what's happening to the woman, by the way. Is putting that type of
Yeah.
stuff
I mean,
out?
is she going to be canceled by whoever she was
That's
working with?
you can't be doing that. I'm sorry, you cannot.
Oh.
That's a private life. And listen, terrible what you did, Katlego. If you agreed with the lady that you're in a monogamous relationship, and of course there are now the ramifications of what you did, that's a whole private thing. Deal with that.
What do you mean what's going to happen to her? Like, what do you think should happen to her?
But no, so if I dare to come to you and ruin your life through a video and it's leaked, and I don't want to hear that, oh, I didn't leak it. Whoever you, once mm-hmm. you send it out, you knew.
Yeah, he should be. He should now sue her for loss of income. That's what should
absolutely.
Happen.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You see, I think, and look, you know, if it goes the legal ground, then there'll be all sort of points of attack, but she's covered her bases. You know, she could have said that she recorded it because she wanted it as evidence to use should she go to child maintenance court and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then she shared it with her sister to.
Yeah, but in doing so, that doesn't absolve you of wrongdoing. She has, through her actions, precipitated a loss of income for him, which he can prove easily. And she then must be sued for that amount of money. So if our insurance were paying him, I don't know, 500,000 rand for a series of 10 commercials, which have now been cancelled, he must recover that 500,000 rand from her. So she can get her maintenance after he's got the 500,000 rand back.
And what I hate is now, you know, you're seeing everyone getting on his back. Oh, he cheated. He's got to go.
Yeah, like
cheating's
all these
not illegal people.
All these pure cheating's people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All these people who know how good they are. They're all such saintly people. Please do me a favor.
Yes, I have seen the face of God. I am perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Katlego doesn't represent all the things that I can't be, and he's on TV.
Yes.
He should. I'm incapable of being perfect. Katlego, be perfect on my part.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no, you got to go. Sorry, babe.
Right. Son of a bitch.
Terrible.
Oh. So, you know, I always think the best way to handle something that deals with an audience or people and is just go the emotive tactic. Play with people's emotions, garner sympathy so that people can feel sorry for you, and that's how you move on. And on both their parts, I think they have on both their parts, I think they've misstepped. On a Katlego front, his statement seemed very factual, but also he said it alludes to he just is sorry that this has happened, and he's focusing on his child. He didn't come across as remorseful to Monique for cheating, which I feel like is a slight misstep. Is it the worst thing in the world? No. And then on Monique's front, then for her to do the interview after 2 seconds.
Whoa.
She did an interview?
What interview?
Yes.
What? Wait.
That she did.
Wait. No. No. You see, now this is another mess. What do you mean she did an interview?
What did she do?
Okay.
Let me see
if I can find the trailer of this interview.
Oh
my God.
There's a trailer. That does not look good.
Is it like on E? Is it on like big public radio? Like 7? I need it to be on like 702 or something.
No. It's some YouTube channel.
No one goes on 702 anymore to make any important. Please.
Oh my God.
702. They're at the back of the queue. You go to 702 after you've been on Mix FM.
Oh, yeah. Is that the Solarium?
Yeah.
Gareth, I have mailed you the trailer.
Okay.
And then a lot of people are speculating, like, wow, this was very quick. Perhaps then she has...
maybe this was a plan all along.
She had recorded the interview beforehand as well.
Hmm.
Like, okay, the video leaks, and then
this
interview.
So then there's malice aforethought, which means that, again, he can claim even more money from her. And I hope he does. I hope he does.
So, I think another thing that just makes a lot of people get up in arms about this is because we are not used to seeing things like this in South Africa. Hollywood wouldn't bat an eyelid to it. So come on.
You know,
what are you talking about?
Basitsana says, I want to know why he was even answering someone who was clearly recording him. Yeah, if you tried to do that to me, I'd say to you, I'm not talking to you on camera.
I had a laugh with a friend. I said, he's such a professional. As soon as the lights go on. I mean, he even in answering under duress, the guy was sublime. Let's be honest.
In his dressing gown, great.
Even his tone, he went full presenter. You mean I won't get to see my child?
And also,
it's almost like he had a teleprompter.
You know, here's the other thing is like she, whoever she is, I don't know this girl at all. But she clearly doesn't think very, very many steps in advance. She can't be a very intelligent person because if she was smart, she wouldn't ruin his life because the more money he earns, the more she can get for maintenance. dummy.
And also,
ruining his life now, you're going to disadvantage your child.
Well said. And also, what I don't understand about the fact that he needs to be sorry, if she finds him as disgusting as she says, is does he need to apologize to us as the public?
No.
Or does he need to apologize to you, man?
He owes me nothing. He owes me zero.
Thank you.
I'm not even interested. He could be banging his brains out with every single girl in the whole of Cape Town every day, night, and weekend, and I wouldn't be interested. I don't care who Katleho my boy is busy with.
Yes.
Totally uninteresting to me.
The STD thing.
Yeah, but now that girl's also going to be able to sue. So here's what happens, is that Katleho gets to sue the girl who released the video, the ex-girlfriend. But then the girl who was mentioned in the video, who has nothing to do with this, but has been damaged by this, she gets to sue both of them. So she may end up with a nice payday out of this.
Yeah. You know, the girl who made the video, for me, I mean, it's awful what happened to her in a personal sense. If it's, I mean,
sure.
Oh, man, it's, the after effects are terrible. But I'm afraid, just because you're emotional, it does not give you the right go and act this way. She's going to have to catch some flack for this. Because as an adult, right, adversity is everywhere. Everything you do, I have somebody who says this to me all the time, everything you do in life is your fault. Yeah. Do not ask for it. I don't want to hear excuses of, oh, I was emotional at the time, things are hard. In life, when you're an adult, everything's your fault. I don't want to hear excuses from her. She's got a situation on her hands. And she, hey, listen, above 30 years old, I'm sorry. You get the life you deserve.
Well, here it is. This is from Go Binge. I've never heard of it. But Katleho Maboy's estranged partner, Monique Muller, opens up for the first time. Full interview dropping soon on YouTube. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Let me play this.
One night at Coco, Kat came up to me. We ended up having a one-night stand. He was staying at my place for the first 6 months. Very romantic. If soulmates exist, this person is my soulmate. One day he just came to me and he said, listen, I need to distance myself a little bit from this relationship because I'm feeling a little bit smothered. When the first physical attack happened, I got a protection order against him. He then admitted to sleeping with this woman that night. People are going to have their own views and opinions, but this thing has been so misconstrued. Like, I feel like...
Oh, she's pretending to cry. Oh, no, fuck her. I've just completely... Now, this woman is absolutely unbelievably insincere. I hope he sues her for everything she has. This is not a good person. She must also give up custody of the child to him because she's not a fit parent. She's completely emotionally distressed.
30 seconds.
It's enough. Oh my God. It's enough. I don't need to hear any more. She is a disaster. She deserves
everything that's coming for her.
Yeah. Good for you, honey.
You know what?
I hope Kat sues you. I hope the other girl who was mentioned in the video sues you. I hope you lose custody of your kid. You are a horrible person. Done. I'm Judge Amy Coney Barrett on this one. I've just decided.
In conclusion of that matter, I hope Kat is sitting with Penguin Books right now on Netflix. Here, I will give this to you for free. No, you can call it out of the bag.
Yeah, but he's not important enough. And like Bulelo said just a moment ago, if everybody had just sat and waited this out, nothing would have happened. And I promise you, in a couple of days' time, no one's going to remember the name Monique Muller either.
We've been doing Nguni lessons, which has been quite a pleasure for me. There's a term, Bamlai.
What does that mean?
It means you got what you deserved.
Let's just listen to some more. Wait, there's more. You want to hear some more?
Oh, my God. Hold on, let me just prepare my stomach.
All right, so this is the part where she's crying about how he cheated on her. And woe is me. Listen to this.
Views and opinions, but this thing has been so misconstrued. Like, I feel like everything that this man has already done to me, the world is allowing him to continue to do.
The world.
But he's a fucking great father.
He's a
great dad to our son.
But he's a fucking great father, she says. He's a great dad to
world.
My son.
Listen, hold on. I wasn't letting him do anything before you put a video of it on what we call the internet.
Yes, exactly.
I wasn't letting him do anything
life. Bulelo, we're all implicated in her horrible life.
True.
Everybody, this is typical of a kind of person who externalizes blame for everything that goes wrong in her life to everyone else. Now, suddenly you, me, and the world is allowing Katleho to do this to her. You see how this is a kind of psychopathy. That's what this is.
To the nth degree.
She's
not well.
I know we got to get to blind history, but this is too good. Let's carry on. There's only about there's a few seconds left. Listen,
he's a great dad to us.
He's a great dad.
I will forever respect him for that.
So she respects him, and he's a great dad, but she's more than happy to ruin his life. Lovely human being, this lovely person, totally balanced, totally good.
See, this she didn't handle this well.
Jesus, this is bad. Okay, here. Wait, there's more. Oh no, that's just the outro. Wow. Wow. What an awful situation. What an awful person. I feel so bad for him.
If you want to talk, there's a certain show called So What Now.
Nah. I wouldn't want her on, hey? I'd want him on. I wouldn't want her on. Would you have her on, Sia?
Yes.
I don't know.
Let's flesh it out.
Speaking
on a branding or a PR front, I would have told her, you know, cry your eyes out, but don't be contradicting yourself. Don't talk about how lovely it was to actually talk about the fairy tale of meeting him, and then talk about how tragic.
It's ironic. She met him in exactly the same way that he had sex with the other girl. It's amazing. She's incapable of seeing how her story is exactly the same as the other girl's story.
Oh my goodness! Is it not disgusting when people break up a marriage, right, by sleeping with somebody, and then they're shocked when the guy sleeps with another younger version that looked like you when you were 23?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god! I can't believe it! I thought I was perfect. I could change him.
Wow, she's a disaster. But there are a lot of people like this, and now she's got a kid. This woman is a mother. She's going to raise a child with bad ideas.
And you know what?
No amount of homeschooling can save this child.
You know what worries me? In conclusion, above the age 28, 30, you take responsibility for everything. I don't want to hear your excuses. Mm. You get excuses until you're 28. You're making mistakes.
No, 25. Growing, 25. Not 28. 25.
Okay, Gareth. I want to try and be a little empathetic. Now, I don't want to hear. You're not a victim of anything, honey.
Yeah.
Please get it together. We're old now. You got a baby now. You're going to raise a victim. Is that where we're headed?
Yeah.
You're not a victim in life. If you're middle class and up, I don't want to hear her excuses. You are fine. Get on with it. People like this revolt me, Gareth.
We got to do blind history. So let's get some good stuff going. So Simon Bolivar was the Napoleon of South America. Although if you called him that, he would have cut your head off. Bolivar could have had the easy life of a rich landowner in Venezuela, but he chose instead to create a new Europe in South America. Bolivar made a mark in South America that endures to this day, and he's one of the few men in history to have a country named after him, Bolivia. So take a listen to this. This is Blind History, Season 4, Episode 6. Simon Bolivar could have taken it easy and lorded it over the vast lands his parents left him. He could have joined the high society of Enlightenment Europe and come back to Venezuela speaking Latin and Greek. He could have married, settled down, and never worried about money. Instead, he decided to saddle up and forge an empire. Simon Bolivar would take his army on an incredible journey across the snow-covered Alps on horseback and conquer almost half of the continent of South America. There would be victory, and there would be tragedy. Blind History, Season 4, and an episode on Simon Bolivar, whose real name was Simon José Antonio de la Santísima Trinidad Bolivar y Palacios Ponte Andrade y Blanco. I kid you not, that's the full name. He was born in 1783, and we're going to tell you all about his life. I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host and fellow history nerd, Anthony Medera, the MD of Taylor Blinds and Shutters.
That was a mouthful, Gareth.
Imagine having to say that every time he walked into the room and you have to introduce him.
Also, if you get married, the poor priest has to. mean.
Well, he lived at such an interesting time. You know, that was a time of such amazing people. There was so much going on. If you'd been alive at the time that Bolivar was alive, you might have met George Washington, Louis the 16th, George the 3rd, Thomas Jefferson, Napoleon. Yeah. And the list goes on. It was really the most extraordinary time to be alive, the end of the 1700s and the beginning of the 1800s. This guy was born into a great life, and I don't know why he didn't just take up his very comfortable life and live happily as a Venezuelan rich man with lots of lands and lots of servants and a lot of privilege. But he was born to wealthy parents. He was a happy dude, and for a long time things were good, and then both of his parents in quick succession died, and maybe that's what set him off on a life of very different adventures.
Yeah, so his parents owned farms, so they owned a lot of land, and they owned gold mines and copper mines. They weren't just rich, they were filthy rich. It was very sad. I think his dad died when he was 3 and his mom died when he was 9. So I think that obviously had to have had a traumatic effect on him, but he had so much energy. This guy was destined for greatness.
Well, he was very well educated. At a young age, he was sent to Spain and to France. And while in Europe, he learnt all about the Enlightenment, which was all the rage at that time. And obviously, he had watched very carefully what was going on in European politics at the time, saw the rise of Napoleon, and thought very much of his homeland, Venezuela, and precisely how he could be factored into a much bigger story than the story of just being a wealthy landowner who could join the elite of that country and kind of disappear into history. So I suppose his real career started when he went back to Venezuela after being in Europe for some time. But there's an interesting story about how on the day of Napoleon's coronation, he'd been a big fan of Napoleon for a long time, but had watched how Napoleon had degenerated into a tyrant and had become just an ordinary old despot. And on the day of Napoleon's coronation, he actually closed the windows of his hotel room in Paris and refused to partake in the celebrations. And he vowed he would never, if he ended up leading anybody, ruling anything, taking over or liberating anyone, that he would never end up like Napoleon.
Yeah, that was a clear message for him going forward. And actually, you can see clearly in the way he led it, he definitely didn't replicate what Napoleon did. But at the time, he was married at a very young age to Maria Teresa Rodriguez, and he went back to Venezuela, and she came with him, and she died quite quickly afterwards of yellow fever.
Yeah.
And that he was actually devastated, and that really, really affected him. And he went back to Europe, and he sank into like extravagant debauchery, had massive amounts of affairs. And people just thought, no, you know, who is this guy? He's not really going to amount to much. But how wrong was everybody?
Well, during that same trip, he must have had some kind of aha moment, because he ended up in Rome, and up on the Aventine Hill, he made another vow, this time that he would dedicate his life to freeing the people of South America and to establishing independence for them from Spain. And really, that was the beginning. It was a vow that he managed to live up to, just like his previous one, to a lesser degree, though, because he did eventually end up becoming quite tyrannical. But he went off for the second time, and there were a number of really disastrous attempts to liberate Venezuela. I mean, the Spanish were quite well entrenched, and he fought from the western side of Venezuela and made some reasonable incursions. Of course, his first landing there was a disaster, and there was a guy who came before him who we might want to mention called Miranda. And Miranda had been even more of a disaster. He was sort of like the precursor to Bolivar in his success as a liberator. But Miranda ended up being soundly beaten when he tried to start a revolution. And I think Bolivar probably learned a few lessons from him.
When he came back to South America, there was just revolution brewing everywhere. And he was asked, let's bring back Miranda, who was part of the French Revolution. Let's bring him back to South America and he will... look, he's going to aid us a lot. And in the end, they appointed him the president of the First Republic of Venezuela. But what happened, you're 100% correct, because the Spanish didn't want to let this go. And they kept fighting. And then in the end, he capitulated. And that made, obviously, Bolivar very angry. And
it has to be said, what also made Bolivar angry was that this Miranda disappeared off to a ship with all of the treasury in his possession. He was going to loot the country and disappear. So I think Bolivar felt a little bit like he'd been betrayed.
100% betrayed. And so he basically gave Miranda to the Spanish. Yeah, and so Miranda died in prison.
Now, the interesting thing that happened was that Bolivar fought 100 battles, 79 of those they say were important ones. He rode on horseback during these campaigns for about 70,000 kilometers, which, you know how we regale Hannibal, the great Carthaginian, with how much travel he did to conquer Rome at the time. He probably traveled a tenth of the distance that Bolivar did during his campaigns. And the thing that he did that I suppose was considered the most extraordinary feat of all was that he and his army, a small army, managed to, because he decided, look, we're not going to go and take over Caracas. The Spanish are too entrenched there. So what we'll do is we'll climb the Andes. We'll go through. And, you know, South America is a tough place to move an army through. You've got forests. You've got nonstop rain. You've got swamps. You've got mountains. You've got waterfalls. It's extraordinarily difficult to traverse that terrain. And he took this army over the Andes. They lost 2,000 men, obviously. But his goal was to defeat the Spanish in the second capital, which was Bogota, the future capital of Colombia at the time. And he caught them completely off guard. No one thought anyone would be crazy enough to do that. And he did. He crossed the Andes. It's a much bigger feat to cross the Andes than to cross the Alps.
Correct. And once again, as well, everybody, all his men had passion. And they, you know, he basically made a famous statement that you liberate or die. So everybody was in. They were in. Then nobody was going to run away. And that took the Spanish by surprise. They just weren't up for the battles.
Yeah, he's viewed as a national icon in much of modern South America, because what he managed to do after that was to establish a kingdom, really, an empire called Gran Colombia, which essentially was most of Peru, modern-day Bolivia, Ecuador, Panama even, and parts of Venezuela. So really, about a half of South America as we know it today.
And the size of Europe, basically.
Yeah, it's no small feat. So this guy really did, from the point of view of so many of the great conquerors of human history, he deserves to be put in those books, you know?
And he was also a born showman. Obviously, he had read a lot about the Romans, because whenever he liberated cities, he would have these Roman-style triumphs with processions and be greeted by beautiful young girls and laurels of victory.
Yeah,
and he loved dancing. I mean, he said that's when he thought the best. That's when he came up with his inspiration, when he was dancing.
So this guy also was a great conqueror and by no means a crappy soldier, but he was not the best at administering an empire. And once he had been made president of Gran Colombia, things started to go horribly wrong. He was sort of despotic and tyrannical. He kind of made the rules. The minute anyone proposed anything that he didn't like, he made sure that it was taken out of the constitution. He was a very complicated man and didn't run a very good central administration.
I don't think that was his strength. I think his big strength was liberating, and it was found wanting in the administration side. But he was looking towards a United States of South America.
Yeah.
That's what was his dream.
Well, it started to fall apart pretty quickly. Peru wanted to separate out from the Union. Colombia became a separate state. Venezuela kind of turned their back on him and said that if he ever comes back into Venezuela, he will be killed immediately. They all had started to gain their independence separate from him. And he didn't like this. He felt like he'd failed horribly. And, you know, for most of that time, he was kind of on the run.
And he did also suffer from depression. He used to get very down on himself if he lost a battle, or specifically this time, where everything he worked for was just falling apart around him.
Well, there's a famous portrait in charcoal that was sketched by José María Espinosa in 1830, while he was still alive. And he was only 47, but he looks like a man in his 70s. So clearly, life had taken its toll on him by then. And he found his way, after an exhausting trip by horse, he found his way to the coast. He was trying to set sail from Cartagena, and he was rescued essentially by a fan of his, who was someone who knew about his reputation from long before. And he died in this man's house. He had tuberculosis, so he was not in great condition by the time that they'd found him. And he really just spent his last days in bed, coughing, in great sickness, and not particularly pleased with his life, the way it had turned out. You know, a life that really went from ups to downs to ups to downs. It was full of adventure. If you were the sort of person who liked the idea of many highlights in your life, this was the life to lead. But by the end of it, a bit of a sad state of affairs.
But I think because what he wanted to do, he wanted to actually go across to Europe and try and recover. But then one of his greatest disciples and also very, very close friend, and also a person that had fought many battles, and most of the battles that he was on the winning side of, this gentleman by the name of Sukra, Marshal Sukra, he came down to say goodbye to Bolivar, and he was assassinated.
That's right.
And he was inconsolable, and he just decided not to go across to Europe. And that's where, correctly, you said that somebody just, in brackets, rescued him and just put him up while he slowly died.
Well, it's also sad that he had no children. He was probably infertile because he contracted measles and mumps as a child. And that must have also contributed to his depression, because any great man like that would have wanted to have had an heir to deliver all of this success to. And obviously, you know, one of the sadnesses of his life is that he wasn't able to have children. His only living relatives are the descendants of his brothers and sisters.
But what was named after him was just incredible. So, I mean, he's the number one man, I think, in South America as a historical statesman. Like Bolivia, obviously, clearly very easy. And then also the Bolivian Republic of Venezuela. That's the full name of Venezuela. He's also named after him.
Yeah, and his mantle is often claimed by Hispanic American politicians all across the political spectrum. He's left a militarist legacy in Venezuela. He didn't like factions. And he didn't like the left or the right. He was much more of a military man and much more interested in conquering and liberating, as you've already pointed out, than he was in governing. But there are plenty of people who've claimed to be his successors. You know, Hugo Chavez claims to be the heir to Simon Bolivar, as did Marcos Perez Jimenez in his military dictatorship. So there are lots of people all over South America who continue to honor his legacy. But really, a bit of a sad state of affairs by the end of it, because South America ever since has been plagued by, you know, guerrillas, dictatorships, military juntas, people like Juan Perón, Augusto Pinochet, who ended up being famous for throwing communists out of helicopters. These are all people who've claimed some aspect of Bolivar's legacy, and it's certainly an interesting one. I didn't know a damn thing about Simon Bolivar before we started this episode, and just reading about him has made me obsessed. I mean, I'm now kind of looking up everything to do with him. Interesting dude, right?
Yeah, and Gareth, you know that the Spanish were imperialists and they were treating all the people in South America as slaves, etc., and just using everything for the benefit of the Spanish homeland. And he was so instrumental in just getting that independence in South America away from them. But having said that, you know, there was just centuries of Spanish incompetence that were also part of it, and also cruelty. And then at the time when he was around, and I think we've spoken a little bit about it before, in Napoleon's time, I mean, Carlos IV and the nymphomaniacal Mary and his wife were absolutely clueless. And that just really spurred everything on to help with the revolution. And it's been, I actually loved my research on Simon.
What an interesting dude. He was also a Freemason, which is interesting too. And they continue to, you know, his face, his image, the statues all over South America to his legacy, to his memory. It's an extraordinary life that he led. A difficult life, but a really, really interesting one. And you think his whole story could have ended with him just being some landowner in South America who lived well and died a happy man, healthy, full of food, full of love, full of life. But it wasn't to be that way. He had more in store. Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. He actually challenged a number of other people in his army to feats of strength, like riding. One of his generals ended up calling him Iron Arse. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
No, he called him Iron Arse because the guy could just sit in the saddle and just ride for miles. The horse would tire before he would.
Yeah, you can just see this massive, massive energy. Cliffcentral.com.